From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 29th day of March, 2022. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's from L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Gary Schnitke will be here to discuss wheat in the state of Illinois, across the Midwest for that matter, and whether producers might consider sowing some this fall and what really the ag economics look like behind it. You'll need beans, too, there to double crop if you want to make it pay, really. I'll let you know that now. We'll hear more from him in just a bit. We'll also hear from Lance Honig today. He's the chief of the crops branch at USDA NASS. This is an interview that I did a couple of weeks ago, and you've already heard, but I thought might be worth listening to again as we head towards the prospective plantings report on Thursday of this week. And as we wrap up our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast, too, with Don Day here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn in Chicago at $7.26 and a quarter on its settlement price today, down 22 and a quarter cents. July 22 lower at 7.08 and a half. And new crop December, $6.52 and three quarters, 11 and three quarters of a cent lower. May beans 21 and a quarter lower at $16.43. The July at $16.23 and three quarters, down 23. And November soybeans, $14.48 and a half for the new crop. Down 20 and a quarter. Bean meal down $12.90. Bean oil 79 cents lower. Wheat futures down 42 and three quarters, settled at $10.14 and a quarter for the May. The soft red July harvest month down 42 and a quarter at $10.09 and a quarter cents. And the hard red July settled at $10.24 and a quarter, down 45 and a quarter cents a bushel. Live cattle futures for 100 pounds up $1.70, $138.47 and a half cents. The settlement for the June contract. May feeders at $169.40, up $4.32 and a half cents, and lean hogs at $124.62 and a half cents, down $1.42 and a half cents for the afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Wayne Nelson from L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, now joins us to discuss an interesting, very interesting day in Chicago at the CME Group. Thank you, Wayne, for joining us today. The markets moved a couple of different ways and fairly quickly, mostly to the downside, but losses aren't, at the end of the day, as tough as they were. Can you tell me what happened?
Well, you know, we come into the morning. Basically, when we got into work, why, things didn't look very bad. And then all of a sudden, within 2 minutes here, why, we were watching red, 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 and bigger numbers in red. And that was when it looked like there was some comments that come out of the talks in Turkey. And it looked like there was going to be some sort of settlement. No, everybody was very hopeful. They looked like things were going good and looked like maybe we could get a ceasefire. But then later in the day, why, we got a little announcement that said the Russian troops pulling to a different area does not signal a ceasefire. Formal talks for agreement have a long ways to go. And then we rallied back a little bit on that because everybody's just a little confused.
Yeah, so a ceasefire would have meant that tractors could roll in Ukraine and Russia, both putting a crop in the ground, and that potentially they could also be able to export out of this Azov and Black Seas, and things would get back to normal quicker than expected. And then, of course, when they turned that back around, not particularly happy about it, I suppose, on the idea that, well, things might not be as good as we expected, so there might be a reason to continue to push higher. What are the expectations now for tonight, tomorrow, and then Thursday when we get to the USDA reports?
Well, I think we're going to see some choppy turnaround trade here. There's a lot of people sort of feeling that we can get a little bit of a ceasefire. They did move out of the areas, so a lot of farming probably could get done in some areas because they're not shelling those areas anymore, and they're moving more up towards the other parts of Ukraine. So there is a little hope for a little bit of seeding to go on with that going on. But there again, and the other things. It's, you know, how soon can they get back on is the big question. There's a lot of the guys have been very, very bullish. They're saying, hey, if we get a pullback around the 635 mark in the Dease corn, we got down to 31 today, that they're saying that would be a good buy, because we think there will still be some problems in the Ukraine, because they've got basically a month and a half now to get a crop in the ground. And, you know, it's not just rain they're dodging. They're dodging bullets. So it's not the same thing as just, hey, we're going to get some clear weather and here we go.
What else are you watching in the marketplace? Inflation still, I assume, is playing a role.
Inflation is running very high, and, you know, quite a reaction in the crude oil today along with all that, too. Now, you know, we have really bounced around. That traded from 107.80 down to 98.44, and we're at 104.70 here now. So a lot of change in the gas prices today. But, you know, I think, and you mentioned at the beginning of the show here, Todd, that Thursday is a great big day as far as the acreage guesses and what the stocks we have on hand are. Also, we heard today that there's supposedly rumors that China's bought 7 to 9 more loads of beans this week. So, you know, we'd like to see announcement of that on Thursday. But the acreage is going to be very big. You know, we're looking for 92 million acres in the for corn and 88.7 in the beans. And if that could get changed around some that way. We generally have the tendency of the last few years is to underestimate the acreage of corn. And maybe if anything, steady to a little above in the beans. So it's going to be interesting to see what they say, especially with the fertilizer situation here. And, you know, have people got fertilizer on? Do they have fertilizer bought? And will they go ahead and try to plant corn not knowing if they can get some fertilizer?
And grain stocks are due out as well. What do we know about the livestock sector as well as ethanol, and how good usage has been in this past quarter?
You know, we're thinking that we're going to have about 7.877 is the carryout or the stocks on hand in the corn, and a 1.9 in the beans. You know, will those numbers be? Did we maybe overestimate our yield before, or is there going to be more in those numbers? You know, we've seen as much as a 300 difference as what the estimates were in the past reports. So it's going to be a big number to look at, Todd, and see if we've used a little more, exported, or fed a little more than what they recommend on the report.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you, Todd.
That is Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. We're joined now by Gary Schnittke, agricultural economist from here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. He's written an article for the Farm Doc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu entitled Wheat in 2023? Hi, Gary. Thank you for being with us. Can you tell me about this?
Yeah, so we're looking ahead. Obviously, the Ukraine-Russia crisis or conflict or war, whatever we have there going on, has made wheat prices go higher. So we decided to take an early look and see if planting wheat this fall would make economic sense. Obviously, we're well ahead of that decision, but, you know, starting to think about it, maybe planning for it is a good thing.
Can you give me some history of wheat, recent history anyway, of wheat in the United States?
Yeah, so wheat in the United States actually has been going down in acres, and basically that trend started in 1995. We had roughly 70 million acres in the early 1990s, and now we're in the 40-ish million acre range. A lot of that can be attributed to the fact that wheat demands are fairly stable, and the wheat acres that have gone out of production of wheat have gone into corn and soybeans, and there was the ethanol build for corn and soybeans. We continue to see exports of soybeans grow, so we've seen a shift in acres from wheat to corn and soybeans.
Let's talk about what inputs are needed for wheat. How does it use fertilizer?
So wheat obviously uses fertilizer, and like corn, it will use nitrogen, DAP, and potash, or phosphorus and potash. So the fertility program is going to be higher than soybeans, but less than corn. We budgeted out for Southern Illinois a $279 cost for 20 223 on corn and 229 on wheat. Both of those numbers are very high. We took today's fertilizer prices and upped them 10%. So we were not not hoping that fertilizer prices fall between now and then. That might be not correct, but we decided not to be optimistic about anything at this point in time.
I take it that you need the double crop soybean after wheat in order to make it profitable.
Yeah, so if we're going to make the wheat double crop soybean or wheat work in Illinois, we're going to need double crop soybeans. We've seen that wheat double crop soybeans practice a lot in southern Illinois. And actually those rotations, the wheat double crop soybeans have had about the same returns as corn and soybeans over the last 20 years or since 2022. For 2023, the wheat double crop soybean is projected to be much, much more profitable than corn or soybeans. Again, we are using 2023 fall bids when we're looking at that, which would be right now, this is 2023, so not this year, but next year, $5.60 for corn, $13.10 for soybeans, and $8.50 for wheat. All of those prices are high, but the $8.50 for wheat is relative to corn is higher than usual. So that's driving a lot of the economics of those comparisons at high wheat price relative to corn price.
Does that mean if a producer is going to make this decision that they should also make a decision to make sales of some sort?
I would say if you're going to make a decision of this nature, you would want to sell some of it, right? Probably not all of it. But, you know, if you're making a decision because of price, as Daryl Good would say, you probably should price some of it. So following that dictum, yeah, you should begin to think about pricing some of that wheat.
Anything else that we should discuss as it's related to double cropping wheat and soybean?
You know, it looks like it's going to work in central Illinois as well. But again, you have to be, I would say if you're going to try the wheat double crop soybean scenario, you probably should be more committed to doing it more than 1 year, because if you're just going to do it 1 year, you're just going to get practice and some experience.
There's a learning curve.
So, you know, if you're actually thinking about doing it, you probably should make a longer run commitment to that system.
Hey, thank you.
You're welcome.
That's Gary Schnitke. He's an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Now we'll come back to an interview I did a couple of weeks ago with Lance Honig, who's the chief of the crops branch at USDA NASS. We talked to him about the prospective plantings report survey, really, and how it is collected. This is a survey of producers across the United States, and it really looks at all the crops that NASS tracks. Can you tell me about it?
Sure, and it is. It's, you know, the first look at what farmers intend to plant the upcoming season. As you said, it's based on a survey of farmers, usually around 75,000 or so farmers. We collect the data roughly the first 2 weeks of March. And so you can tell right off the bat, right, that this is information we're gathering before farmers really even get in the fields in most places. And so they truly are intentions. But as you look ahead to the upcoming season, you want to put some numbers around what acreage is going to look like by crop this season. The farmers are the only people that really know what they're thinking. And so that's why we get out ahead of it. We survey those producers. We ask them, what are you planning at the time that we talk to you now?
Is there anything that USDA NASS does with that number to massage it in any way?
Well, so what we do is, you know, we take all those responses. We summarize that up, of course, but we do compare it with, you know, previous years, how do intentions compare to what's actually planted? So our goal, of course, is to estimate how many acres are going to be planted to each crop, you know, in total this year. It's based on intentions today. And so there's a couple of things that go on with this data. Number one, things change, right? I mean, you're talking about asking intentions, you know, several weeks before planters even get in the fields. And so some things can change. The weather can change. The economics can change. And so therefore farmers' plans can change. And so some of that happens, and there's some noise in the data that way. But on top of that, there's also always some natural bias between the data you collect and what the estimates end up at the end of the season. And so that's the part that we have to filter out and adjust in the estimates that we publish in the report at the end of the month.
Can you offer an example of what the natural bias looks like?
Well, so, you know, if we just talk in general terms, and this really isn't specific to this report or even acreage for that matter, there's certain tendencies that people have when they report information. And so farmers are no different than anybody else. They've got some natural tendencies to either, you know, report in one direction or the other compared to reality. Yield's probably the greatest example. The truth of the matter is that farmers tend to underreport their yields a little bit as they're forecasting throughout the season. And you get to the end and you find out what that is. And so those sort of things happen across all the information that we gather. And we need to filter that out and translate it to what we believe is going to be the actual answers at the end of the day.
When the trade looks at the acreage figures for corn and soybeans, they'll wonder about an item that is included, I'm almost positive, in those two numbers, which is prevent plant. Can you tell me how it's incorporated?
So prevent plant is not included in the prospective plantings. It's not included in any of our acreage numbers because prevent plant, by definition, is not planted. And so therefore, these estimates that represent total acres planted for each crop would not naturally include prevent plant because it's not planted. Now, with that said, this early in the season, the expectation would be that you're not going to have prevent plant. And so it is certainly possible that there could be acres included in the prospective plantings report that ultimately become prevent plant and therefore get backed out when we get ahead to June acreage and find out that they were not indeed planted. So technically, we don't include prevent plant, but you're probably not going to know if it's prevent plant already in March.
Well, my understanding was that that was one of the things that USDA massaged into the numbers, knowing that there would be some form of prevent plant in the acreage from the United States, and so it would adjust total prospective plantings down some to account for that.
So not specifically. And so again, when I talk about, you know, comparing what we collect in March with what the final acreage is at the end of the season, you know, there are some differences that occur in that information historically. And if some of that happens to be prevent plant, then yes, it would get accounted for that way. But we do not specifically make any adjustments just for prevent plant.
I stand corrected in that case. One other item is there will be a brand new, along with the prospective plantings report, piece of information that producers can watch on YouTube, the live briefing to the secretary or whoever happens to be taking the report from the United States Department of Agriculture. Can you tell me about it?
Yeah, that's right. And we're pretty excited about that. Obviously, for many, many years, when these reports are released, we have provided a briefing to the secretary, both here at NAS and the World Ag Outlook Board does the same thing for the WASDE report, which, of course, is released simultaneously with the crop production report when we do that. But you know, we've wanted to expand that audience for a long time, and we finally have an opportunity to do that. So when we do these briefings for the secretary, or as you said, whoever happens to be signing that day, we're actually going to live stream it on YouTube. And so it'll be readily available to everyone as it's happening. The current plan is to, of course, it depends on the release time, but for the crop-related releases that come out at noon Eastern time, that briefing will start at about 12:05 Eastern time. So just 5 minutes after the report is released, we'll be providing that briefing live and available for everyone to see. It's just another way to increase our transparency and make as much information available to everyone as possible.
And does that mean that that briefing is moved in time? So did it occur in lockup previously and now it will not?
So historically, we used to start the briefing shortly before 12. We would bring the secretary into the lockup space and start that process of briefing him or her before the release actually occurred. But for a while now, we've actually pushed that to just after lockup. It had no bearing on the release itself or what was happening. And so logistically, it just became easier to move that process shortly after the release. And that also allowed us to more adequately prepare for the launch of this live stream. And so, yeah, you're right that back in time, it used to occur a little bit earlier, but really only about 10 or 15 minutes earlier.
And those who want to watch it can find it where?
It'll be live streamed on the NASS YouTube channel. And there's certainly information, well, anybody with Google can probably find the NASS YouTube channel, but also if you go to nass.usda.gov, you'll find some information there to link you straight to it.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. That's Lance Honig. He is the chief of the crops branch at USDA NASS. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. On this Tuesday, let's check the weather forecast with Don Day. He's at Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Don, thanks for being with us. Can you bring me up to speed on the cooler, wetter weather we're having in the Midwest and what that means for the rest of the nation as well?
Well, what we're seeing is what I'd say is a very typical late March weather pattern that's going to go into early April here, to where systems are frequent, getting a little more frequent now, going coast to coast, starting in the Pacific Northwest and moving across the northern tier of the nation, dragging cool fronts through, and that's triggering shower and thunderstorm activity and keeping our temperatures a little on the cool side. And we did have the past week or so bring a fair amount of warmth into the western United States, while the central and the eastern United States had quite a bit of cool weather and wet conditions. Now, we do see temperatures moderating some, Todd, but I tell you, we're going to stay in an active pattern. And all indications suggest that over the next 7 to 10 days, there's going to be more rain in the Midwest and across really the entire Corn Belt. Some of that moisture will reach back westward into parts of Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas. Even central and eastern areas of Nebraska and the Dakota is going to get into the action as well. So some needed precipitation is coming for some. Maybe a little bit too wet for some others.
You mentioned that this is the beginning of what you think might be a cycle that will last into early part of April. I'm guessing every 3 to 5 days, maybe we'll have something. And are these clippers or something else that'll be running across the United States?
For the most part, these do look like more of your clipper nature, which means they're going to go across the United States fairly quickly and not stall out in the middle of the U.S. And that's always a risk this time of year where you can get a larger storm. But right now it looks like they're going to be moving fairly quickly, but there will be a high frequency of them. As you said, about every 3 or 5 days or so, something will be coming on through. We're hoping that some of this wet pattern hit some of those western areas, that the hard red winter wheat areas. I think they're going to be getting a little bit more precipitation, some of the southern plains that need it. But we're also looking at some very wet areas in the south, central, and southeast United States that are going to continue to stay wet.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's Don Day. He's with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.